One of the things that has really made this group powerful and effective, what I keep hearing, are the speakers. And we've been extremely fortunate over the years, and the speakers just keep getting better and better and better. And in most cases, the speakers have come to us and said, can we present to your group? And I'm sure Jim is going to continue that tradition of great speakers. Today is no exception. Adam and I started talking three or four months ago. And it took a while to get him on the docket, but we did, and he's here, and he's got some great information. We're going to let him introduce himself and his associate, and you are on.
Okay, sounds good.
Have fun.
Yeah. All right, if I walk in front of the screen a lot, I'll try to hit the blackout button, or don't worry. Before I get started, I thought I would just do, just to kind of break the ice, a quick magic trick, actually. My other life, amongst other things, I'm a magician, too, so I need a volunteer. It's just a card trick. Nobody will be cut in half. You don't have to worry about that. So somebody would like to come up and help me with the card trick. All right. You can go. Your name is?
Melody Evans.
Melody. Okay. Do you have a good imagination?
Sometimes.
Do you see what I have here in my hand?
I see a card.
It's a whole deck of cards.
I see a deck of cards.
Very good. Yeah. Everybody else can see these cards, the red bicycle cards? Frank, you see this?
Yes.
Okay. Melody, take these cards and shuffle them up really well. Mix them up. They got to break the seal first. Yeah. Let me have that empty box. There we go. Okay, good. All right, I'll hold those. Shuffle them up. Come on, you dropped a couple of these. These are, you know, I take good care of these.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to have these back. I'm going to fan these out. And Melody, pull out one card and show it to everybody in the audience. Does everybody see the card?
Yep.
Okay,
yeah.
Put it back in the deck, face down, Melody. Take the box back. All right, now I just want to make sure. I have over here a real deck of cards. These you can really see, right?
Yes.
Watch my fingers. They won't leave the deck. What was the card that you picked?
What was
say
the
it out
card
loud.
That I picked?
Yeah.
Three of spades.
You're sure?
Uh-huh.
No doubt in your mind?
Positive.
Okay, I'll go through here nice and slowly. When I open this up, okay, nothing funny. Hold this here. As I do, you tell me if you see any cards that are facing down, okay?
Yeah.
I'll just go through slowly, and hopefully you can see this back there in the cheap seats.
Well, there's
There's one card. Just want to make sure. Right. I had my eyes turned the other way. My eyes were closed. Never met you before.
Yeah.
Hold that against your side, that card. Pull up for a second. Just want to make sure. What was the card you had said again?
Three of spades.
And turn that card over. Now, my segue is that business planning for a consulting practice is not magic. In fact, it's a lot of work. So what I thought I would do when I usually speak, and especially since there's a lot of people here that are considering a foray into consulting, I wanted to start out with a little bit of my background, what I did first, why I chose consulting, what I did to launch my practice, and then we'll get into business planning, which I teach at the SBDC, along with this gentleman over here. But to get into a little bit about business planning as well as marketing for your practice. So I thought I'd just cover that real quick. In terms of it, we'll have questions at the end of my speaking. We'll also have that forum. But I'm perfectly happy as we go to just raise your hand, shout out questions. It makes it much more interactive and much more fun, okay? So feel free, any questions you have. Anybody have any questions yet?
I know magicians never do.
Yeah, I can't tell you that. Can't tell you. If I tell you that, I have to kill you, and I don't want that. You don't want that.
Where
so.
Do you teach?
At the Wharton Small Business Development Center.
Okay.
It's a business planning class, venture initiation. So, anyway,
so. Where's that center?
The one I teach at is at Penn. It's at 40th and Spruce.
Okay. There's one closer in Chester. Is that right?
There is one at the SBDC. Yeah, it's at Widener. There's one there.
Sorry. Competing.
Yeah. No, it's an SBDC too, and also I think Temple has some classes not far from here as well. But Penn or that one are probably a little bit closer. Yeah, that's on venture initiations, other classes, and yours is on strategic planning, right?
Strategic business planning,
yeah. Yeah, so there's lots of classes, though, and I heartily encourage you to take them. They're not geared for consultants specifically. There might be some value, though. But I'll talk a little bit about courses in a little bit. So first off, like I was saying, in terms of the background we're going to try and cover here, we're going to try to accomplish several things. a little bit of background, how you can launch, for those of you who are considering this, and if you should launch a practice, how to grow it, and then specifically business and marketing planning, and we're going to get into what goes into a business plan. A little bit different if you're doing a business plan for a consulting practice, because you don't need the same kind of financial analysis and capital equipment and whatnot that a business would need, but an abbreviated version, as well as some marketing planning. And lastly, we're going to solve the financial crisis that's gripping markets worldwide.
So,
might be a little bit too ambitious, but you know, we'll try. Okay?
Great.
I still have 58 minutes. So, so let me give you my background real quick. In terms of what I've done, I graduated from the Wharton School of Business with a finance degree. I ran a publishing company called Lapidary Journal for about 12 years, where I learned all kinds of skills that are very transferable to what I do now. So a lot of what I did there was hiring, management, planning, marketing, dealing with staff, dealing with vendors, dealing with all aspects of growing a business. So the consulting, which you'll see that I do now, a lot of it stems from that. And we were able to sell the business, grow it, sell it, which is what most entrepreneurs wish to do. They wish to start it, develop it, grow it, and then do it again. I've done that 3 times. And through that process, after we sold it, also learned a lot of corporate skills. So dealing with a company called Prime Media, who was the company who acquired us. And I'll talk a little bit more about that as well. So acquiring company lays off half the staff, including me, end of 99. What the hell do I do now? I'm sure some of you in this room have faced that. I'm not sure everybody here who started consulting chose to leave the previous position. You may have. You may have left accordingly. You may have done a career. And I think that that feeling is something that a lot of people have. I remember driving home that day and thinking about it. And I called my friend Alan in the back, actually. He's not just a videographer. And I said, oh my God, what do I do now? So I sat down and began to think about it. I'm going to talk about a lot of that next. So I was ill-prepared, had no resume, had done no networking. I mean, none. Hadn't gone to conferences, speaking engagements. The people I did know in publishing were in the gem trade. Wasn't what I was going to do. They were in overseas. They were in New York. They really had virtually no value. I had one contact that had value. And had done no planning for what next. Hadn't considered consulting. And I assume there's other people that have had this kind of feeling.
Yeah.
Definitely getting that feeling. So, we'll continue on. Today's categories are get a job, buy a business, go to graduate school. That's always good. Postpone things. Maybe learn something, or start consulting. And for people that are entrepreneurial, which if you're consultants, you must have some entrepreneurial bent to you, probably you considered many things. So it's funny, as I talked to people in this room before I spoke, what they said they were looking at or considering doing. So someone here said they might go back and get a day job, or a real job, or a job, as I've heard people call it. Others have talked about later in life, changing career, becoming a lawyer, becoming an accountant, going to grad school. I had a client who went back and became an architect, a landscape architect, changed his career. And really evaluating each of these things, I think, is a worthwhile endeavor. And I'm going to quickly tell you the evaluation for the previous ones, and then we'll talk a lot about evaluating a consulting practice. And I believe you should evaluate things, and if you do, then you plan. Your odds of success are much greater. And that's what we do for clients. So, any questions at this point? Okay. So, kind of a process of elimination is what I went through. Crossed out the job. I did not want to work for someone else, at least not then, and not since, and not today. So, you know, talk about assessments. A couple people in the room do assessments. You know, my personality likes to have a lot of autonomy, likes to create things, likes to be independent. And so that working for someone in a large corporation was never really something I looked at strongly. But if you're evaluating going into consulting, you really should walk through these. And for other people, there'd be many other things in this list. Working for a nonprofit, becoming a teacher. There's many other things that could be on this list. Retiring. Buy a business. At that time, although since then I did buy into a business, I didn't want to risk the kind of capital that was required. Also, following that graduate school, I applied to law school. I got into law school and decided it would take too much time away from family and chose not to do it. And then started consulting, door number 4. So there's not even a door 4 here. I couldn't find that when I was stealing images from Google. So there's a door. Pretend there's a door. So the beginning of entrepreneurial consulting started in 1999, and although these are the services I list now, this changes. And one of the things that I talk about a lot when I teach the classes down at Wharton is change. And as you've seen, you've got to be really focused on change. If you're someone who is in a job and you're going to go into consulting, I think whether you stay in a job today or you go into consulting or you're growing consulting practice, you'd be very open to change. Companies who don't change die. People do consulting practices and decide that I'm going to be a weather consultant for meteorological stations in Utah, and then Utah outlaws weather stations or economy changes or competition changes, it's not going to work. So again, in planning, I keep morphing and changing the services I offer, the way I market them, and how it goes. But now, real quick, the six services: planning, recruiting, marketing, ops, finance, and coaching. And for the sake of this group, I don't want to waste your time in terms of explaining too much of the details. Planning we do is to help businesses get launched or funded, a lot of venture capital-backed clients. The writing and capital I do for clients oftentimes is for existing businesses who want to do a strategy and plan for next year. Recruiting we do very differently than a typical recruiter. We don't charge 35%. We charge by the hour. We learn the client's business. We have the associates that work for us to help with that. Marketing, strategizing, operations, finance, and coaching. A lot of the coaching we do is with, some of it is with consultants, some of it's with entrepreneurs, and some with CEOs. Working with them, coming to the business and saying, I'm stuck. My business is in trouble. Don't know what to do. Don't know if I cut staff. Don't know if I add staff. Don't know if I shift what I do. We work with them. Some of the consultants we help launch, we start with them, meet with them once a week or every other week, sit down for an hour, come up with an action plan, meet again 2 weeks later. So target and pricing model. And I'm going through this so you kind of get my background and also for how you should think through things strategically. Okay? So I want to explain how I came about it. And then also you. So before I do that, any questions so far on launching? Yeah.
Your span of activities, there's quite a bit of diversion there. Was that based upon your desire to do those things or based upon clients who came to you with...
That's a great question. I would say it's based upon a couple things. First, when I did my plan, and I looked around and talked to people, and I did some research, I asked, what kind of services do you feel are needed? And I talked to clients. One need that became quite apparent was recruiting. Most of these businesses were in growth mode. They needed to have a lot of staff. The CEOs that I talked to were either hiring them themselves instead of getting clients, which is what they should be doing, or they were having the office manager do it ineffectively, or they were paying 35% and they couldn't afford it. So that was a need that I unearthed by talking to people. The planning of something I had done a lot of myself, and so that was a service that I wanted to offer. Operations I had done a lot of. The coaching and finance evolved over time because we'd be going to clients, myself and associates, they'd say, now how do I get funded? Now how do I go to my cousin and my uncle and grandfather who want to put $300,000 in? What do I give them? What's the financial plan? What's the business plan? And on the coaching side, I just had so many clients who said, well, I kind of need planning and I kind of need recruiting and I kind of need this. I don't really know what I need and I want someone to hold me accountable. I have a client who's running a $20 million company. He has 200 employees. No board. He owns the company. Nobody to go home to at night and talk about it. And over time of providing services, he said, I really want someone to talk to solve things, to be there. So a little bit of market need, a little bit of what I offered, and a little bit of evolution. So, and I continually tweak it. I mean, two of these six, I'm thinking about knocking out. Yeah?
Although you mentioned that there's a change factor in consulting, don't you feel as though there's a common set of skills that all consultants use? I'm thinking like listening and analyzing and writing. Although the market changes, of course, but isn't there a common thread along with that?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I do think there's certain skill sets that, and personality sets and experience that someone needs if they want to do consulting. They need to be, I agree with you, listen, they need to write, they need to analyze. But there's very different consulting, and so I think in terms of the services you provide, as well as the market you're targeting, that can change. You know, I at one point was targeting very publishing. I had a number of publishing clients, still do, and I was targeting that. And I decided, I made a conscious effort, I wanted to shift away from that as the industry was changing. And in terms of services, again, adding coaching and adding planning was something that you can shift. And I just think you should constantly be aware and constantly be getting feedback from your clients and prospects. And I'm not saying you should morph, you know, so much that, you know, you should, you know, I should be selling tile next week as well. I think there's a need for that. But if it's within your skill set and the scope you can provide, or that your team can provide, if you have other people, you want to entertain that. So. Okay. So just to take a step over here in terms of what the services are specifically that we offer, a little bit more detail. The target client was specific, privately held. So I don't touch clients that are public. No, if somebody came to me with a public client, would we work with them? If it was a project that our skill set was adequate for, yes. If I wasn't qualified, then no. And at least from my understanding of marketing and positioning and branding, it's hard to say you're everything to everyone. It's already a broad set of skills I offer, but the reason we can do a broad set is that it's to a very targeted client base. So 0 to 75 million revenue per year, privately held. Have there been exceptions? Yes, there's been 2 nonprofits. There's been a client at 200 million, but typically that's the revenue and that's the type of client. Aim to work with firms with one-time special or ongoing needs. So some clients come in, they've got one project. Oftentimes the one project is an entree. They say, help us hire the controller. We hire the controller. In doing that process, we find out that they're printing contract and way overpaying. We find out that there's no job descriptions. We find out that there's all kinds of issues of problems the company has. And then over time, they develop a trust and they call upon us to execute those. And it's the notion for us was seasoned professionals. So our clients at that level tend to not have a $250,000 chief marketing officer. They don't tend to have a chief operating officer. They don't tend to have a CFO. They might have a marketing director. They might have a controller. So higher level skill set they don't have. And some of the startup ones don't have any of those people. It might be three guys who are starting a business. They have a plan. They have an idea. They have money. Or they might not have any of those three. Some of the people. Yeah.
Have you ever worked with venture capitalist groups?
Yeah.
The way you're framing that. So
we do.
They know you as somebody that might reach out for to help the business they're thinking about buying.
Exactly. Benjamin Franklin Technology Partners. I'm sure anybody's familiar with them. We do a lot of work with them on two levels. One is they hire us to come in, myself and other associates, and analyze companies they're considering investing in.
Okay.
So it's like a 4-round process to get funded by Ben Franklin. They come to us and they say, can you do the analysis? Mm-hmm. You've got 2 weeks, you've got to talk to the board of directors, the staff, look at the financials, put together a report. And in turn, they and other venture capitalists, exactly, come to us and say, listen, I've got a portfolio client, they're a mess. Can you work with the CEO? Can you help us with hiring? Yeah, exactly. And oftentimes it's hourly, so we'll start with a retainer, prepaid. All of our clients prepay, no exceptions. They prepay, they set up an amount, we work the retainer down, and we send them statements every other week, and at the end of that, if they want to continue, they, you know, pre-fund again. Also do project-based, so some clients, not most, which is unusual, are project-based. They come in, they say, I want to pay, we got X dollars for this project. And some are retainers. So we're working with a client now, software startup, and they pay a fixed amount per month, and they get a certain amount of meetings, they get unlimited calls and emails and access, and he preferred that model. So we're flexible. So over a 6-month period, attracted 5 clients, joins, and then I joined a client full-time. It was an opportunity to work full-time with the client, gain equity, and I thought this would be the kind of opportunity I'd want to pursue. Which is what I did. So joined, it was S&D Marketing. The client was in trouble. They were doing $1 million in revenue. I invested in the company. And in 2 years, we tripled the revenue and was able to triple my investment and sell the company. I wanted to sell. The guy who owned the other half said, no, how can you sell? I said, it's perfect. You have an offer. You sell. So he kept his hand. I sold. Did consulting again. Joined a company called Unreal Marketing. Similar path. Prior to that, started consulting, did it 6 months, gained 5 clients. This Unreal Marketing came to us, was a client, said come on full time, which I did, again, for about a year, year and a half. After that is the next part. Decided to take the consulting practice when I returned to it 3.5 years ago to a different level. I decided instead of trying to attract 3 or 4 or 5 clients and then finding a business to buy, I wanted to build it out as a consulting practice. Had associates, develop the practice, develop the business. And decided to look at it very differently. So I sat down in the summer of 05 and wrote a new business plan for the consulting practice. Talked to people, decided how I would launch it in terms of, or relaunch it I should say, in terms of client base, in terms of who I wanted as clients, and in terms of how to do it. As part of that, I went through the process by the Institute of Management Consultants to become a certified management consultant. One of the people in the audience here asked about that process. The Institute of Management Consultants has been around since the 1960s. They have a process if you want to become certified, which used to take 6 months, now it's about 3 months. It's not full time, it's not that many hours. They speak to clients of yours, you have to do case studies, there's a knowledge-based testing, there's ethics-based testing, there's an interview in person with 3 consultants. It's really a wonderful process, and there's then ethics that you agree to uphold. I joined the Delaware County Chamber, continued my membership in Mainline Chamber, and added associates to the practice, not all at once, but one by one. My associates are all 1099 contract associates. There might be times where, actually there's a 5th associate now, where I have any one of them full-time working for a client or a project. There's times where 2 or 3 of them might be idle for 3 months and not have work. The reason why they work, I've known all of them for at least 5 years, many for 15 years, is they all either do consulting or bring a practice that I can add value to and adds value to my clients. So, yeah.
So if you're sitting idle, clearly you don't have you can't work for anybody else. Part of your contractor, your associates, they
can work for whoever they want.
They work for you and they work for themselves and or
exactly. Yeah, and each one has a story why. I mean, Alicia's a stay-at-home mom now, and so the projects she does tend to be on the research and recruiting side. It's phenomenal for her. She works from her house. Jim Schulman has his own marketing practice, and so ours dovetail. We can do projects together. There's projects I would, you know, assign to him. These two guys are Wharton guys I've known for years. One has a coffee shop, and so his hours are flexible. And they're people who I've known, trusted, vetted. Typically, the client, depending upon the project, usually works with me directly on the coaching and the higher level things, and they help out with the other portion. So, yeah.
How do you set that up as far as profits from the project? Do they get a certain percentage? Do you get a certain percentage if you bring them in? How does that work?
Well, if it's an hourly-based project, I negotiate rates with them. And if there's other associates that I bring in, so sometimes these are associates, they're on my website, they work for me, they always do lots of projects. There are other consultants, though, or experts that I need to bring into a project. I wouldn't call them associate, but through different groups like this or IMC or Mid-Atlantic, if a project I needed something that was a skill set I didn't have, I certainly wouldn't pretend to have it, and I know what skill set these associates have, I would find somebody. And basically, I negotiate a rate with them. In my engagement letters with clients, I have rates for myself, I have rates for my IT associate, and rates for my other associates, and basically mark them up. You know, and if it's project-based, I'll go to them and I'll say, hey, I've got X dollars to pay for this project. Are you interested in this project? We work out a number. And it's got to be a number where I can at least double their rates. If I can't double their rates, then the numbers don't work out. By the time I pay for marketing and billing, and it's not worth the time. So my goal is to at least double. If you can triple the person's rate, that's good. That's sometimes you can do that. Yeah.
That's exactly the model we have. It works so well. Really, the reason it works is because a lot of these independents, you can't get a foot in the door, you know, to work for a company. They need to have a master agreement with somebody.
Yep.
And so they have that with us. And then we can negotiate rates, you know, for one person or another person to do this or that project, this or that job up there. And again, you know, we might bill the customer a couple hundred an hour, and then we might pay the consultant 125, let's say something like that. So then the difference is I would just consider it our profit, our commission, you know, or what have you. And additionally, what we've done is if one consultant is there and then through a networking process recommends somebody else, and that person can be also brought on a particular customer site, then we might take the profit on the second person and divide it and give additional commission to the first guy.
Sure, that makes sense.
It really works out well.
So, but you would have one master agreement with the client, which then allows you to go and pull in anybody that you need to.
Well, anybody that they will also accept.
Well,
and we have
yes.
to send the people up there and have them interviewed and negotiate a rate for that particular person
okay.
with the customer, and then negotiate a rate to pay the consultant with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they all know what the spread is. It's not like we're trying to hide anything.
Sure.
You know, it's just doing business.
My clients do not have approval over the associates that I use, but the work goes through me. It's different. They're not on site. If it was an independent that I was using and it was a set project they were doing, then they would. But here they just see associate. They don't even see which associate it was. I mean, I tell them what they are and give them their backgrounds and all. But yeah.
Do you also have an agreement with one party or the other that says that they can't hire without going through you?
Oh, yeah.
Do you hold it with the consultant or with the company?
Both. Yeah. No, I have agreements with all the associates as to who they can get work with, as well as the what they'll get paid, and referral fees, like you were saying, as well for them. And then I have a 3-page engagement letter that says that they can't hire associates for a set period. Also covers if we help them get funding, what we get beyond the hourly rate, if we help them sell their business, all these other ifs. And it's easier up front. I get it all up front. Up front, when they need the project, they'll sign anything. They don't even read it. And then later on when you say, you know, remember page 2? Yeah.
Pulling out the numbers, would you be able to make that contract available to anybody that might be interested in looking at? Anybody starting out? It's a very scary thing to kind of look at. Would that be something you might be willing to share?
I don't think so, because it was written by an attorney and I had to pay him for it. I think it's his. He owns the property. Otherwise, I would. Yeah, I wish I could, but...
That's right.
Yeah. If I could, I would. So... Okay.
I was
yeah.
a comment from a legal standpoint.
Sure.
You mentioned earlier about... Yeah, your consulting practice contracting with these individuals and wanting to have some sort of exclusivity. And if you don't want to have exclusivity with them, because if you're 1099-ing them and they're independent contractors, that's going to go against, just because you're calling them independent contractors and paying them as such doesn't mean they are. They can be kind of be employees, in which case you can face all kinds of additional tax liabilities and penalties and whatnot if you're not treating them correctly under IRS regulations. So you do not, if they're truly independent contractors and consultants, you want to let them, as Adam's doing, you want to let them have their own, you know, let them do whatever they can. Obviously, he has agreements with them that have restrictions in terms of their approaching his clients for business and that
Correct.
Kind of thing, unless they're going through him.
Correct.
But he does not want to have an exclusive relationship with them, because otherwise... That's an indicator that they're employees, not consultants.
Exactly. Okay. So this is just a quick list. You can go to our website, though, of some of the clients we've worked with over the past 3 years. I'm sorry, past 9 years. Some of these were clients with first, second round, and a couple of these clients were clients of ours first, second, and third round. And they're very scattered. So this is a consulting firm. That's a technology company, Chamber of Commerce. We did the search for Delco Chamber. Technology company, printing, publishing, manufacturing, publishing, technology, financial, retail. So we span the gamut, because the skills that we offer are what is consistent. So anyway, I think we need to get on to how this can help you. So which we're going to talk about next. So before I do any last questions, before we go on to that part of it, in terms of planning? No? Okay. So if you haven't started your practice yet, okay, what do you need to do? bunch of things. And there's, you know, 5 hours of this if you want to go to the SBDC. I'm going to try and condense 5 hours into about 5 minutes. First thing is prudently evaluate if you want to go the solo route. You need to think about that. You should talk to your spouse, significant other, your kids, your previous coworkers, your friends, and say, do you think I'm the person, as well as introspect. Analyze your skill set to determine what services you could offer. So you might say, you know, I'd be great as a consultant. I was just a CFO of a company. Well, really? Well, what role and what skills do you have in that? You got to break them down. What is the skill that I'm going to provide? What is the service I'm going to perform to be able to have something that's valuable? Because you might think you're the greatest at this. That might not translate to the consulting world. Investigate the market for need for these services. So this is one of the things I talk about all the time at the SBDC. The person says, they'll say, I'm opening a flower shop. And I'll say, why? And they'll say, because I want to open a flower shop. And I'll say, how did you come up with a flower shop? And they said, I always like flowers. And I'll say, but is there a need for a flower shop? Well, sure, everybody likes flowers. And this is a real client. No, not client, a real person in class recently. And I would say, well, have you sat down the location you want to have and analyzed what is the demand for flowers there? What are the competitors there? Are there too many competitors? Are there too few competitors? What is the market for these services? Next thing, do the math. So you might say, I need to make $50,000 a year. I need to make $500,000 a year. I don't know. Figure out what you need to make and back out the math. Okay, by the math, what I need to make, and I divide that by the number of weeks of the year I'm going to work, I need to make X dollars a week. How realistic is that? How many projects do I have to do for that? The average project's going to be X dollars. I got to get 10 projects a year. I got to get one project a year. I got to get 100 projects a year. Think that through. When I did and put that down in a spreadsheet, it helped me figure out how plausible it was to achieve my goals. And I'm very much a believer in tracking the results, tracking the goals, seeing how close I am to the targets. If you don't do that, though, you might find yourself surprised when 6 months later you say, wow, I made this much money. I guess I should have made more, and I'm billable full-time, or I'm not billable full-time. Do that beforehand and determine your pricing. Both your pricing in terms of your model. Are you going to be per project? Are you going to be retainer? Are you going to be hourly? As well as, if so, what's your price? Are you going to try and be the high price, which can be fine? You're the expert. Are you going to try and be the low price? Are you going to try and be competitive? And what is that? If it's an hourly rate, are you $200 an hour? Are you $300 an hour? Are you $100 an hour? Are you $50? You know, what is your pricing? That pricing needs to be based upon A, what you need to get by, B, what the market will pay. And what the market will pay is much more important than what you need, because the market doesn't really care what you need. So you need to figure out what the market is and the value you're going to provide, because ultimately you're selling value to the client. And if you don't deliver value, then you can't get paid. So any questions? Yeah.
How do you go about determining the pricing in terms of the marketplace? And I'll give you an example.
Sure.
Equity coaching, it ranges from $50 an hour to $10,000 an hour, just from what I've been able to determine. Of course, there's a lot of reasons for the difference. Is there some way you narrow that down a little bit?
Yeah. Well, for myself, I talk to people in the field. So you might start out and say, wow, it's $50,000 to $10,000. I would then talk to more coaches. You might say that they're competitors, but they'll talk. People talk privately, and they'll say, I get this, I get that. I would talk to more and more of them about what they get and how much they make and how it goes. So initially, as I was doing my research, I found a very wide swath as well. As I talked to more and more people, and I talked about the type of clients that they have and the markets that they're pursuing and who they are, I would find out a narrow band. So I agree. For what I was doing, I would find out initially $50 to $500. And over time, as I winnowed it down and found people that were closer and closer to my market, I got within $25 an hour of what the market was. Now, over time, though, what's happened was you can begin to perform a service and you can try it. You can try a number and you can try a new number and a new number. And I kind of settled it at one number. When I did the second round of consulting, I raised that by $25 an hour. The third round, another $25. And every year, I would take it up another $10 an hour. And this past year, I raised it $25 an hour. In December, when the market crashed, accelerated, I dropped it back $25 an hour. And recently, as things have seemed to, at least for me, gotten a lot busier again, I've raised it again. And it's somewhat testing. I don't think there's a magic way to know, you know, especially if what you're doing is broad, it's hard to know some sort of magic way for what the pricing should be. So, yeah.
Do you have any idea how many people
rates and average annual income, you know, whether it's place to place, phone. So it's pretty good service.
How do you spell that?
Yeah.
Sherpa. S-H-E-R-P-A. Okay.
Thank you. I had no idea. I thought they were.
Almost all the professional associations, like, so for me, Intuit does the study. And so I know. And you also, let me also add, understand regional differences and experience. So if you can back your experience, which says, you know, I have 10 years of experience versus I have 1 year, you know, or whatever. And regionally.
Another key factor is if you publish, if you're known, mm-hmm. if your name is known, that goes up exponentially. I was wondering if you've done some publishing or found publishing, getting your name out there, valuable as a marketing strategy.
I have published. I was on the Bank of America website for small business, and I have articles through the Mainline Chamber and Mid-Atlantic Consultants Network. I do think it's helpful. It's one of the authoring articles, one of the suggestions I give people. It's also helpful, not always necessarily directly, like someone reads the article per se and calls you, although that happens, but you sit down with a prospect, and in terms of what you show them or hand them, you say, oh, by the way, I just want to show you this article. I was just, you know, by the way, I just quoted my Bank of America website. It's subtle, and it's somewhat immeasurable, but it adds to credibility. And I do, that's great, the suggestion of checking those other statistics. I would argue or suggest, though, those are valuable for a range. You approach an individual client, and maybe on the other end of things, when I was buying services, owning the publishing company, a piece of it and running it, that's great. The guy says the industry standard for XYZ consultant is $126 an hour. You know, if I felt like paying that, I would pay it. If not, you know, so that's very useful, but again, you got to take it in context. There's other clients that'll pay more than that. There's other clients that'll pay less. And then, of course, there's value-based pricing. If it's a project, going in and saying, trying to really learn what their value of the project is to them. How much will they save? What pain will they avoid? What's that worth to them if you can help them achieve that? So, yeah.
2 points. One, although you have said that what you want doesn't really matter because the market dictates what really can be paid, it's probably a very good exercise to go into the point of seeing how many available hours I have a year. And then coming up with how much per hour you're going to be worth, minimum. And then this is a comparison figure against whatever you can get.
Yeah.
You got to have that number one.
I agree. And be sure when you take that number, be sure you factor out taxes, health insurance, rent, all your expenses.
Now, in relation to analyze your skill sets, a lot of people are very good in saying what they do well, but they are very poor or on recognizing what they cannot do or don't do well.
Yes.
And that is probably where you need more help, I see, because that's where you're going to have to divert some services, either somewhere or get education.
I agree.
Okay? And it's a point that if you talk with someone for 1 hour, they can talk about all the things they do good, but they are not going to tell you one thing they are not good at.
Well, and to that end, just make a note about something here. I can't recommend highly enough Alan, my friend, that he does assessments, just of that. It helps point out strengths, weaknesses, areas you need to improve in, things that are fits. And I think that's critical when you're starting a business like this. You're right, because I have clients come in and they're like, wow, I'm the greatest environmental engineer. A client that does environmental engineer work. I'm the greatest environmental engineer in the world. That's good. That's going to get you about a quarter of the way there for doing your consulting. Now you need skill sets around that. You look at him, he admits, I can't do ABC. But he's now helped through me and through other reaching out to other people, filled in those holes. So I think it's an excellent point. And in consulting, you're going to find that to be a challenge because when you do your own consulting, you'll find, until you can either afford to or choose to pay for other people, you're doing everything. You're doing the actual marketing, you're doing branding, you're hiring designers, you're vetting vendors, you're doing the accounting side, the bookkeeping side. I remember when I did all this work the first time and I got my first client, I came home to my wife and I said, this is great, I got this client. And I thought, holy shit, I got to do the work now. Oh my God. That wasn't the end? So that's, you know, there's that realization when you get there. And then you do the work and you're like, now I got to build a client. So which we're going to get to. So some tips for this. Read books on consulting and starting a business. I'm a big believer in reading, although I don't read enough myself, but I believe in it. Well, audio tapes you can get as well. You can get podcasts. You can get all those in easier formats as well. Million Dollar Consulting is my favorite consulting book. It's wonderful. 10 Consulting Association meetings. This one, Mid-Atlantic Consultants Network, the Institute of Management Consultants. Get educated, learn, talk to people. Decide your offerings. Decide your services. You need a name for your business. And I won't agonize too much over it, but the name can matter. It can be helpful to your business. You need business cards. They're so easy to get online. I use 48-hour print. You get them back in 48 hours. They're cheap. They're wonderful. Incorporate. I didn't do it the first round. The second round, though, I did incorporate for legal purposes as well as to differentiate myself. A number of the things that I've done have been pragmatic, or there have been value, intrinsic value to them. A number have been for the image that it creates. So incorporating connotes a different air of seriousness to your practice as opposed to someone who's solely in transition. Having a website indicates that. Becoming certified indicates that. Having business cards, you know, each of these things help establish an image for your relationship with prospects. And seek out an experienced mentor or coach. I didn't do that the first two times. The third time I did. And it's, I believe if you're selling a service to believe in it, it's good that you're actually buying into that as well. And I'm going to talk about that shortly. So let's talk about the business planning part of things. Any questions, though, before we do?
Were they in order?
The previous one or this?
The previous slide?
No.
They could happen in a different sequence.
I mean, I think reading and consulting, and this is all data gathering, is very useful. I guess the coaching might want to move up. But pretty close. So I think those things are even before you write a business plan. That's kind of like the data gathering side, I would say. So anyway, business planning. Many consultants start a practice without a plan and find themselves drifting and not gaining traction. So they say they're going to consult. It's 3 months later. It's 6 months later. They hadn't really sat down. They figured they would just get to it. It's in their head. And they never did this or that. And if you were to sit down with them and say, did you incorporate? Did you have your website? How many speaking engagements have you had? Have you done this? Have you hit what you wanted? They might say, well, no, I just was trying to sell my services. It's like getting in a car and saying, I'm going to go to Boston, and you just drive north. Not necessarily the best way. Others who successfully launch without a plan, there's some people who start businesses or practices successfully. Why? Well, part of it's through sheer effort. Part of it's through luck. Part of it is a lot of consultants that I know left a business, but had either were outsourced initially from that place. A friend of mine left Lincoln Hospital in a senior position, and they just outsourced his role. He went from marketing position internal to external, you know, one third of the time. And that third was 80% of the income he needed. So others in pharma, consultants I know, were outsourced. They had such relationships that they, in 10 minutes, they were up and they had clients. So they might successfully launch, but then they find themselves 3 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years later, their contacts are gone, they haven't done their marketing, they haven't done a plan, and that client got bought out by another company. Dow buys them out, and now they lost their contacts. So not having a plan, even if you're successful, is not good either. If you're successful and doing well, that's the time to write your plan so that you know what you're going to do while you're successful as well as when you're not. And people tend to say, I don't have time to write a plan. Never going to get the time. It's too busy. It's going to take too long. That's really not a good solution. And if you wait till you'll have the time, you'll never have the time. So say, you know what, I'll do 2 hours a week. I'll do it every Sunday from 1 to 5. Whatever it is, start doing it. Business plan can help determine what you want to accomplish and goals you wish to achieve. And by a business plan, you know, I've written and been involved with plans that are 50 pages, not for consulting practice. And you can write a one-page business plan. So I don't know that for your practice you have to write 50 pages, but you should probably write 5, 10, 15 pages about your plan. It can also lay out steps. So I don't think the plan should just be, here's what I want to accomplish and here's what I want to spend. It should also be how. So I intend to have a Google AdWords campaign and spend $400. Well, how? I intend to interview by April 1st three AdWords companies. By May 1st, I'm going to have my keyword selected. By May 30th, I'm going to have the campaign launched. Even if they're small steps, even if it's for some of the homework, it will get you turning it from a business plan to an action plan. So also, changing, like I said before, the tool and coming back to it continually is critical. So you're going to write the plan. If you write it and you put it on a shelf, it will not have maximized its value to you. You need to look at it every month. You need to look at it continually. You need to think, you know what, that's right. I was supposed to have tried to look into GPSEG for consultants. I was supposed to do this. Come back to it. And lastly, the simple process of creating the plan will help you. So although I said you should come back to it, which I definitely think you should, if you write the business plan and shred it when it's done, it will have phenomenal value. It will force you to think about marketing, force you to think about sales, force you to think about finances, force you to think about the parts of your business you have to do. Yeah?
I often find that when you embark on trying to write something like that, that a good way to get started is to look at one or a couple samples from other people just to get your thoughts going. Got any ideas?
Yeah, Business Plan Pro is one of the things I mentioned at the end. They have lots of sample business plans. The SBA has lots of business plans. Microsoft, I think Publisher Online has business plans. So I agree. I think starting out with samples makes it a ton easier. Yeah? I've heard of feasibility studies, but in terms of business plan, I'm not specifically familiar with that. Maybe somebody else is. I'm not. I've seen feasibility studies if a company is trying to decide if they should move ahead with a project, but in terms of how it relates to business planning, I'm not sure how are they using that for you.
I wish I could think of a program a little while back, but it was just enough to have me begin to think, even if what I was going to do, how I was going to do. But it wasn't as intense, but it led to the business plan.
Okay.
I wish I could think of that program for everyone.
Okay.
But it was called feasibility planning. I always heard about studies, too.
Yeah.
Adam, I work with the Potsdam Score Group, and oftentimes we advise people on how to put together a business plan. I've always told people you've got to do it three times. And the final time would be your business plan. The first time, really, with my clients, tends to be a feasibility plan.
Okay.
It's where you go through it and see all the pieces and see if it's going to work. And then you start doing iterations to get down to how you're going to make it work.
Okay. And maybe that's kind of like the research part about what I was at as the first title.
And I generally run them through the whole gamut that you have up there so they see the total scope and end up with the, cash flow analysis. And
right.
That's where it all comes together.
For yeah.
Them.
Okay.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
I think you have to present it. I think the best way to test your business plan is when you think you're done, you get four or five people and stand in front of them and give them 15 minutes and take all the comments to heart and they'll point out the things that you're missing. Because even if you get help writing it, you're not really going to be able to get a sense of, do you have everything covered? Is there something important that I've missed? Mm-hmm. Until you stand up and present it to some people.
No, I completely agree. Yeah, I'm real big on vetting ideas. In fact, when I work with startup clients, which is a heck of a sales pitch, I say to them, there's a 50% chance what I'm going to do is help you evaluate this and help you plan, help you decide what you're doing, and I'm going to say you shouldn't do this business. So if all you want is a cheerleader, don't hire me. I've said that twice in the past week to prospects. Because the greatest service you might be doing to somebody, and you're helping a business plan, if it's a startup, now lots of our clients are not startups, but if it's a client, at the end is to say, there's these numbers. You tell me where we're wrong. You answer these questions as to why this business isn't going to work. So, yeah.
How do you feel about clients asking you to write their business plan?
We've written business plans from scratch for clients. I've also written plans with a client. I've also had clients write the plan and we help them along the way. You know, the best thing is if someone comes to you and says, write me a business plan, it's like, paint me a picture. Mm-hmm. It's not good. Mm-hmm. So I Whereas, which is why I changed from saying business plan writing to maybe typically I say business planning. We'll help them write it, but more likely we'll sit down and it's iterative. And we'll talk about these different parts. And I'll ask them questions. I'll help interview them. And I'll say, okay, you go back now and you write this piece with these questions. I then edit it, change it. If they're not, it's got to be their business. You know, they're not going to succeed. And so, on the other hand, though, there's some people that are incapable of that, in which case I'll interview them and create it by interviewing them, but it's got to come from them. Not all of it, but the vast majority, because they won't be vested. They won't be married to it, and it's their business. But you can help facilitate it greatly.
Yeah, how do you use... I've had a lot of resistance with that. I guess it's the population market. But, so you write it. You write the, or either, you know, something about the arts thing. I don't need a business plan. I'm like...
Right.
It's like a tug of war, and I just wonder, how do you guess this is something that's yours, it's not mine?
You know, right. Are you charging them?
No.
You're not charging them? Well, that's part of the problem.
I'm charging them.
You are charging them.
But they still have, I don't know, it's just a resistance when you get to the plane. Maybe they'll do one piece of it.
Right. No, and that's why I'll walk them along. I'll break it down into pieces, and I'll say the first piece, then, if they can't do that, is let's work on the products and services. Here's what you need to include. I might interview them. I might then email them and say, here's the kind of pieces that need to be in here. You write a page. It's due Friday. Some clients have to break it down into baby morsels.
Oh, yeah.
And then
okay.
I'll put it together for them.
Okay.
So the pieces, and again, there's no magical pieces. You can get online the pieces to a business plan. Some people like different things. Some of these are pieces you would have in a regular business plan that was not a service business. Some pieces here are missing that you would have in a service business. Real quick summary, brief description. Typically in this business, you're not looking for funding, but if you go to venture capitalist, all they read is the executive summary. And they probably, if you're lucky, read the first three sentences of it. If they don't like it, they throw it out. If they do like it, they'll read the whole executive summary. In this space, though, it quickly captures the description of the business. The business summary is what type the business is. Is it incorporated? Where is it based? What's it going to provide? Services and products. Detail, explain. So services, you might say I'm consulting to pizza owners. Products, though, you might have products. You might sell a videotape on a DVD on how to, you know, launch your pizza business. You might have seminars you put on. You might have, you know, products and services. Think about both. Market analysis. So in your plan should be an analysis of competitors as well as analysis of the type of clients you're going after. Yeah?
So where do you start to develop that type of information?
Which?
Market analysis.
Well, market analysis, there's a bunch of things you can do. There's tertiary research, which you can do online at the SBA. You can do online at the SBDC. You can do it online at .gov. You can also go to Google and look up statistics, look up industry. If you're specific to, you're doing consulting to the publishing industry, there's publishing sites. If you're doing consulting for providing Quicken services, there's Intuit sites. So a lot of it is online. Then I think some of it, I always believe in first-hand research, primary research. So I would then go from the capturing the broad data to first-hand. So I would then go talk to people in that field. If I'm starting a coffee shop, I would go talk to four other coffee shop owners. I would sit in the corner of 13th and Market if I was launching a coffee shop there and stand there for a day and do surveys of potential customers. First-hand research. So those are
trade shows.
I'm sorry?
Attend trade,
trade shows.
Shows.
Absolutely.
A must.
Go to trade shows, read trade magazines. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't do too much market research. Operations and implementations. How will you run the business? It'll be myself. I'll be working from my home office. I'm going to be establishing these phone lines. I'm going to be establishing this back service. My email provider will be X. My data storage will be Y. My backing up of my computer will be Z. I'll bill clients this way. I'm hiring a bookkeeper 5 hours a week. And these are very different when you write a business plan for a company that's going to have 200 employees than a company that might have one or two or three. The team. Now, even though this is for your own use, I still would write up the team. I'd write up a team bio. If you're using two other people, put their bios in there. So if you show this to somebody, you show it to your spouse, you show it to your child, you show it to your friend, you show it to your significant other, someone, they'll be like, this guy's serious. He actually evaluated the team. He knows who's going to work on it. I see their skill sets. If someone reads it, they can come back to you and say, hey, Jim, I read your whole plan, and like, you have no accounting experience, no bookkeeping experience, no marketing experience. Who's going to do that? I read your team. Put it there. Are you using solo? Are they contractors? Are they employees? Are they 1099? How will you pay them? Significant risks. Now, a lot of business plans don't put this in. I believe in putting it in. I believe in indicating your warts, your blemishes, and all your problems. Why? I put this in for venture capitalists, too. Why? Because you're not going to fool anybody. You're not looking for funding, typically, here, I would assume. If you are, they'll see them. And it's much better to say to somebody, by the way, here's our whole plan. We've got three problems. Our market is diminishing and moving overseas. I don't have accounting experience. And we don't have enough capital. But then within it, I then address each one. Here's why we're addressing it. We're going to actually be outsourcing our manufacturing overseas as well. We're going to benefit from this trend. I've already identified two bookkeepers that will come in and fill in the hole for the accounting problem. And. And by you writing down the significant risks, when you show it to your friend to vet this and say, what are the risks that I miss? Add them in if they find them and answer them. Because it'll force you to then get over those risks and be honest. Because if you're not, you're going to fail. So don't try and kid anybody. And if you're getting a loan, don't try and kid the bank either, because that's fraud. And then financial projections. And financial projections, you don't need 20 pages of projections. If you can do Excel, or if you have Quicken, you can do projections. And if not, put them down on paper. That's fine, too. And say, I intend to get three clients a month at this much dollars and this much revenue, and show it across the months. And here's my startup list. I need a laptop. I need software. I need to belong to these organizations. I need a website. So you can sit down and sit back and say, okay, this is a complete checklist.
Just one note in relation to the business plan. Actually, I don't see a business plan like a static document. There's a certain amount of statistics on it, but there's a lot of dynamics on it that you've got to be changing once in a while. For instance, in my business, I never thought that I would be on the green side and thinking about selling equipment. And actually, it's a need that came to me by the customers. They brought that to me.
Yep.
So I had to incorporate that.
Agreed. Okay. No, I couldn't agree more. Absolutely.
Because I heard a lot of people talking like a, sound to me like a static kind of stuff.
No. Change. So initially, if you don't want to write a whole year, or if you don't want 3 years, if it's a business plan looking for venture funding, you do 3 years. In a consulting practice, I think 3 years, you know, year two and three, I don't know how much value there is to a three-year business plan. The year two and three, I think it should be very brief. You can indicate your ideas for the second and third year. I don't think you should spend, you know, 10 pages of that. In fact, if it's too hard for you to get started, talk about your artist clients, write a six-month plan. And then once you do your plan, you got to get your clients, you got to deliver your services, bill, market, repeat. And a lot of consulting in my mind is repeat. Get signed engagement letters, fill your consulting assignments, bill them. Don't forget about billing. Continue to get educated. I'm big on that. Web-based seminars, books that you read, associations, organizations, perform all the marketing listed next, it should say, not previously, continuously, even when you're busy. Lather, rinse, repeat. So, questions on that? Yeah.
Something Jim Schumann spoke to us sometime back, and the number of things he said really struck with me about, you know, when it gets to be the blister pack, you know, that's the time when you can really put it into the market and you know what you're doing. It's time for you to go to the next level. I'm bringing that up because I was thinking along this line. Do you also need to say, do you want to be a leader in the industry? Do you want to be on the edge? Or do you want to be a follower with a lower cost proposition? I think that's part of where do you want to be in the business cycle of that particular industry or piece? And, you know, everybody and their brother went into real estate when it was booming, for example.
Sure.
Now they're all getting out and going into other things. So
bankruptcy.
I think that's important to know, where is this something new? So speak to that a little bit. You know, are you going to be leading or lagging?
Yeah, no,
you're going to be lagging. What's your strategy?
You should, in terms of positioning and in terms of pricing model, decide where you want to be in the metric. So, and that can change too. You might decide initially, I want to get my foot in the door, I'm going to be low cost, and then once you have some clients, you're going to raise yourself. Or you can come in the first time and be high cost. If you're in a field where your name's going to be known and it's a wide field, it might be tough to come in low cost and try and raise it. I'm in a very fractured business, in small business space, so I can charge one person X, I can charge the next person triple X. You know, they people do not know from one thing to the next in terms of pricing. But that depends upon the field that you're in. In some fields, that's more important, what you're saying, than others.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Yeah. I would then revise the business plan and extend it another 6 months, continually tweak, like you're saying. Track results. So in terms of tracking results, I track the results of all my efforts. If you're doing phone calls, if you're doing marketing, if you're testing a campaign, you have to know which one's paying off. And sit back and 6 months later say, I've gotten 6 clients. Where'd they come from? How did I get them? What did I do that I shouldn't have done? Where should I be spending my effort next? I had one organization I've been involved with for a long time, and I finally sat back and I was looking at it and said, I've never gotten a client from this group. The value of the educational part is not that valuable. It's just inertia. You start going to the same places over and over. It's not good. Inertia can be valuable. It can also be detrimental. And lastly, survey says, survey clients and prospects. You'd be surprised what clients will tell you and prospects. And most people like to talk or do an e-survey. And sending out surveys is a wonderful tool to get clients too. So you send a survey out to your prospects and it's entitled Business Planning, if that's your field, for 2009, 12 questions about your business plan. And you find out that, you know, 10% of your list responds, and you see the ones that have no business plan and say they need help. Well, geez, so you're going to call those 50 people before you call the other 450 people on your list. So, and talking to existing clients, it's scary. A lot of people I've talked to are, I don't want to talk to my client, and ask them what they think about my services. What if they don't like me? What if they got a problem? I don't know. You're going to keep my head deep under the sand.
You better know it.
It's better to know it. It's better to ask. Okay. So let's go through some specifics in terms of the marketing piece. Write a marketing plan. Now, the marketing plan is a piece of the business plan. It can be. Or if you're too afraid to write the business plan, if that's too ominous, start out with the marketing plan. If you won't write a business plan with your operations, your staff, the financials, if you refuse to do that, please write a marketing plan. Because if you're doing consulting practice, you are doing marketing. Unless you just fall into consulting and you've got 3 clients. If you do, that's great. But I wouldn't bet you'll still have 3 clients a year from now, necessarily. And therefore, I would do a marketing plan. Write it out. List the practices you're going to pursue. List the means. List how much you're going to spend on each one of them. Some quick ones. Start an e-newsletter to your database. I use Constant Contact. There's other ones. I love Constant Contact. It's very easy to use. You should hit your group. You know, some people hit it once a week. I hate people that send me stuff every week. Some people do it once a year, once every 6 months, once every 3 months. You know, I think you should be hitting your list every 6 to 8 weeks. It's tough to do. Mine's been more like every 3 months. And the value of the e-newsletter is, if you're meeting people and you're meeting prospects and you're meeting colleagues, you can't possibly talk to all those people every month or every quarter. They forget about you with no bad intent. An e-newsletter, even if they don't read it, you're just popping up and they're thinking, oh wait, yeah, that's right, that guy does this. And one time that they're going to hit that newsletter is going to hit them when they need to hire someone, they need a marketing plan, they need assessments done, they need training and something. I've gotten clients from my e-newsletter, multiple clients, 3 clients. I've gotten contracts for positions that I was hiring for filled. And I've also had an image changed. So people think you just gradually shift your image to people by marketing to them. Attend networking meetings in your field and industries you target. Join chambers of commerce or other relevant associations. So don't join the Chamber of Commerce if it's not relevant to you. So my, you know, engineering client, it's worthless. And environmental engineering client, the chamber's worthless to him. I have another client who's a interactive advertising agency. It's very worthwhile being in the chamber. So think about your groups. Don't just go to the groups without because, you know, someone said we should join this group. LinkedIn, which I know the next speaker, I've heard him speak. He's going to be speaking about LinkedIn. So that was the next?
Ed Callahan.
Yeah. He's excellent. He'll talk about LinkedIn. So I don't need to go into that. I found it extremely valuable. You know, if you have 100 people on LinkedIn, and each of your 100 people have 100 people, you have 10,000 people that are 2 levels deep. You're in the space where you're doing hospital training. You type in hospital. My client does a lot of work for hospitals. I typed in hospital. I said, I don't know anybody in hospitals. It pops up first level deep. I've got 6 people on boards at hospitals. Second level deep, like 30 people come up. So it's very valuable for searching for industries. It's very valuable for introductions. I wanted an introduction to Steve Goodman. He's the leading attorney for startup companies. I typed in Steve Goodman. Turns out he's a second level connection of one of my largest clients. I called up, I sent an email to Ari, can you make an introduction? Here's what I want you to send him. I was in the guy's office the next week. I go to have meetings with somebody, type in them into LinkedIn, even if you're not connected, You see their bio. I know exactly what the person's done in their background. I also use LinkedIn for seeing who we have in common. So you sit down, the first 5 minutes talking about, oh, we both know Sally Holub. We both know Jim Shulman. Breaks the ice. We'll talk about a lot more ways to use it. And by the way, everything I've done on LinkedIn so far, which has been a lot, haven't paid a penny. There is a paid service as well, which you can do even more, which I'm not knocking, but get started for free. So begin to market. Phase one, continue. Call. Now, I can't underscore this one enough. I think it's the most important thing you can do is call. I've been in a business with direct marketing, with telemarketing, with online marketing, with industry marketing, with trade show marketing, and it's probably the scariest part is picking up the phone, but it's the most direct and most valuable. There's no substitute for picking up the phone and saying, hey Mark, how's it going? How's your business? What's happening? Do you know what I do? Can I tell you 2 minutes? Can I buy you coffee? What are you doing Wednesday? Oh yeah, yeah, sure. You know what? Can I sit down with you and buy you coffee and talk about it? You sit down, you have your meeting. Nothing replaces that. I know a lot of people who would like to run away from calling. It takes more time. It's scarier. It's harder. Initially, to your list, to your contacts you have. I don't care who they are. You're going to consulting, you call your accountant up. Want to talk to what I'm doing. They have clients. Talk to your lawyer. Talk to everyone. I'm a big believer that everyone should be on your list. Once you have a better list, once you have better targets, I wouldn't say call the florist if you're an environmental consultant over calling the industry, but initially, call people and network. And there's no substitute for that. Send emails. Big believer in emails. And I also, because of my personality, COO, consultant, overly organized, I track my calls. I have a spreadsheet. You can use Outlook. You can use other tools. You can use Act. I want to know how many calls I'm making. So if I sit down at the end of 30 days and I say, gee, I haven't had any meetings, or I haven't had this, or I haven't had that, I'm able to go back, or have my coach go back and say, how many phone calls did you make? I made 7. How many emails did you send? 12. How many newsletters did you send? None. How many? And go back and say, oh, so maybe it was me. Maybe I didn't do enough effort. Track your efforts. Have lunches with contacts and those you target. Sit down. Just say, hey, I want to sit down and explore what I do. You would be very surprised what those people don't know that you can do. I lunched with somebody yesterday who I've known for 9 years. We sat down for lunch for an hour. They knew me from Ben Franklin. Thought I did financial due diligence only. They've been getting newsletters and contacts. Had no idea the other pieces. And he's bringing me into a client of his next week to talk about our services. And at the end of each one, ask them, do you have one or two people in business who might have a need for training, who might have a need for HR consulting, who might have a need for QuickBooks? And follow up. So one of the things that I beat up my clients and consultants over is this one client's doing a great job. He's having these meetings. He's doing everything. But that's the end. So I have the meeting. I'll say, then what? I'll say, I don't know. I figured they know me. What's this to do? Beat the guy up? So that person after that meeting needs to get a newsletter. They need to get an email thank you within 48 hours. You need to call them 2 weeks later and follow up about things. They need to be developed. I don't mean berating them because you're selling a professional service. But if you let people fall off the cliff, they will. People will forget you.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
There was a really cute book that came out about maybe even 15 years ago. It was called NFL Networking, and it really had those concepts in it. It was all about, you know, whenever you do have a resource or a reference, you know, a contact with somebody, just make sure you don't leave that contact without getting one, at least one, if not three more.
Yeah, I agree. And that too is hard to ask for. One of the things you taught me, that's hard to ask for at the end of a meeting. It's so much easier saying, okay, I'll see you later.
It can become natural.
It absolutely becomes natural. It's like doing any exercise. You got to practice it. And if you don't like doing it, stand in front of the mirror and practice. Go out to lunch with your sister and practice. And at the end say, hey, it was great having lunch. Are there one or two people that you think it might be worthwhile, my meeting? Could you mind making an introduction? Would you mind calling them? It's best. If they don't want to do that, in my email that I thank them with, my standard email, I send them a note. At the bottom it says, hey, here's a template. Would you mind just sending it to them saying, hi, Tom. This guy, Adam Mosco, would be a great person for you to sit down and have lunch with. Love you too. Copy both of us.
And Adam, also, yeah. Do you, after you have that meeting contact, you always follow up with your initial, with a thank you and let them know how it went?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In fact,
so important.
I created like a lead sheet and it forces me to. It actually is a checklist and it says, did I thank the source?
Yeah.
You should, because you know sometimes people want a referral fee. Sometimes they want to just be recognized. Sometimes they want you to refer somebody else. Most people, though, just want at the least want to be thanked. You know, and I'll, you know, if I actually get the client, I'll send them something. You know, not a fee, because I've actually tried that and that's rarely worked, but I'll send them dinner, I'll send them, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's just like the thank you and something modest. Yeah, Alan?
I've also found that, you know, a willingness to be of service to them, not from a professional perspective, but from, you know, is there anything I can help you with? Really offering that before you're actually even asking for something might actually make it easy for you to ask for referral or maybe something.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, when I would do my early meetings, like years, until I probably think even 18 months ago, I was stupid or foolish or naive, and I would do my show, and two things I failed to do or didn't do enough of was have them talk. Because the more they talk and the more you learn about their business, the more you listen, the better. That's a whole sales training thing, which is, that's sure. Not my expertise. But have them listen, as you listen. And I agree. At the end, I'd say, well, you know, who else, you know, who can I meet? And I'd leave the meeting and I'd think, well, they didn't introduce me to anybody. And I wouldn't think, you know, they're here, yeah, they might like me, and yeah, they might want the introduction, but there's probably something they want too. You know, and I'll say, same thing, what kind of introductions are you looking for? And some of them, this guy I met with the other day, he's looking for law firms of blah, 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 and at first blush, I don't know anybody that has that, but I meet people all the time. And then I thought, you know, 2 hours later, I was driving out, and I thought of somebody who actually is exactly what that person needs. So, yeah.
Well, I would just echo that, and I'm not sure whether it's because I'm, you know, I'm meeting with people mostly in nonprofits, but when I would say that, well, okay, thanks, you know, for meeting with me, what right. Can I do for you? After they got the look of shock off their face, you know, they were very gratified that I had asked them that.
And almost invariably, they'll say something. This guy yesterday said, oh, I need a web designer. You know anybody? I said, yeah, I know like three web designers that are great. I gave that to him. All of a sudden, the person's like your best friend. So, okay, so some more things on marketing. So create a brochure or other professional leave behind. And that brochure can be a flyer. It can be something you do through an ad agency. It can be a PowerPoint presentation. Something to leave them with. Work existing satisfied clients for testimonials and referrals. Some, I would say, of the clients I've gotten, 70% have come from client referrals. Client or other referrals of people who know me. I've gotten clients from each of the associations I'm involved with. Four of the five, I would say. I've gotten clients from online advertising. I've gotten clients from my newsletter. But referrals is great. It's the best. When I walked into my first time where a client introduced me to somebody, I went through and I brought my binder and I had my presentation. I'm like 2 minutes into it, and the guy's like, that's okay, I'm using it. I'm like, no, I got to do the whole thing. And I called my friend Allie afterwards. I said, this guy won't let me do the whole thing. And he says, shut up. The most important part about selling sometimes is shut up. You're sold. So I've learned that now. When the client refers you, typically, you're sold. They don't want the whole show. You just start in, talk about the project. And sometimes you have to ask clients for referrals. So I reach out to clients and ask. Speak in front of business organizations. Great. I've spoken maybe 13 times in the past 3 years. Seven of them were to schools, not business associations. Six were business associations. Got a client every single time. Pay for listings in print directories of your field. Test them. Pay for web listings in associations you're members of. If it's a good one, I've gotten Mid-Atlantic Consultant Network, I've gotten Mainline Chamber from being listed on their site, gotten clients. Test them on it, add in a trade journal or a trade website. I wouldn't do that first. This is not something I would do phase one. As you're getting further down, if you're a publishing printing consultant and there's the Folio magazine, which is read by all the publishers, try a small ad in it. Try a classified ad if you want to, you know, dabble more easily. Email blast the targeted group. So I've done email blasts to the Mainline Chamber, Delaware County Chamber. It's targeted. Most of them are often cheap. You'd be surprised how inexpensive. A couple $100 for an artist to create. You write the copy. $200-$400 to hit the list. You get one client out of it. It was worth it. You're hitting 1,000 people, 2,000 people, if it's the right list. So that's a big thing, is if it's the right list and if the piece is right. Explore natural or organic web marketing. Natural or organic web marketing is when you redesign your website or design it such that it appears high on search engines for certain keywords through meta tags, and that's a whole other discussion. Paid listings on Yahoo, Google. You can test the campaign on Google, you can do it yourself, and you can spend any set amount of money per month. You set the limit, you pre-fund the card, it shuts down afterwards. Might be worth testing if you have something that people might be querying. So if you're doing bridal consulting on the main line, you can buy the words bridal consulting on the main line. Someone types that in, you appear, and you only pay per click. Write articles, which is what you had, someone else had asked about before. Any questions on these? Yeah.
Just curious, particularly with small businesses, do you recommend that they put together a marketing budget? You know, in other words, okay, I'm going to try all of these things, but you really got to know where to get some hits from with the dollars and the time, because often these take a lot of your time.
Correct.
So what's your sort of hardline recommendation?
Well, in terms of the planning part, which is what we started about before, the marketing plan needs to have a budget, needs to have numbers.
Sure.
And you got to then pick out, hey, you're not going to do all these things in 6 months. You're not going to do all these things in a year. So, I mean, I've been consulting 9 years. The past 3.5 years with associates, I haven't finished this list. I'm just now testing Google. And then I guess I will have done everything on this list. But so pick and choose. Pick the ones you think interest you the most. You think for your service you'll do the best, or you have the best resources to do yourself or through other people. And then, yeah, I would do a budget. I would not just say, I spend $10,000, let's put it here. I would decide how much I'm willing to spend in total for the year. I'd break it down by month, and I'd break it down by each of these different services that you want to try. Yeah, and then test them and track them. So when you come back, some of these are more easily trackable, but every person I speak with, I say, how do you find out about us? Paid listings, Google, those are a piece of cake to find out the source. It tells you get reports. So, boy, this is a lot to focus on. Mm-hmm. So, it is a lot. So, again, be members of industry groups, reach out to consultants, get a coach, talk to people. Those are all ways to succeed, and all important ways, because, again, people think that I'm going to start a consulting practice. There are so many facets to it that if you try and do that all alone, you may succeed slower. Getting help can be... You feel like you're losing control. You feel like it's going to cost you too much money. But you don't have to spend $40,000 to hire a bookkeeper. You might just use somebody 3 hours a month. You know? Couple quick books and resources. Alan Weiss, Million Dollar Consulting, which I mentioned before. You should buy and read if you haven't. I would strongly suggest. The Institute of Management Consultants. They have free daily e-newsletter tips. They're kind of nice when you're starting your practice, or even if you're a mature practice, and that every day you get a tip. Are they all valuable? No, but a good third of them are. They give you ideas, they give you suggestions. Sometimes you come down and you're not sure which client or what you're doing that day. It's nice to have something here. Mid-Atlantic Consultants Network has meetings, they're free meetings. So it's another quick group to go to.
Is that the James Chan?
Yeah, James Chan. Yeah, Jim Shulman. They meet in Wayne.
Monday morning.
Yes, second Monday of the month.
This Monday coming up.
Right.
7:30.
There you go.
Merlin's Building on Route 30.
Yeah, Merlin's Building on Route 30. Their website is maconsultants.com, and it lists the article, lists when the meetings are. I think it's the 13th. And questions, if you're still awake? We're covering a lot. Yeah.
Do you have to evaluations when you're in the middle of a project? Instead of just at the end, do you also sort of have a check-in at the middle? Any formalized...
Well, oftentimes the projects that we're doing, I'm in constant communication with the client. So, and the ones that we're coaching or consulting or advising, the feedback is ongoing. Some of the longer term projects, I will want to see how they're doing, but it's not formalized. It probably should be, but it's not.
At the end of the engagement, you do have that evaluation.
Yeah, when I finish an engagement with a client, I will. Talk to them verbally, and I'll also send them a form afterwards. And I'll ask them specific questions about the project, what they were satisfied with, what they weren't satisfied with. I find, again, it's a form of survey, but it's something that at the end when you're wrapping up, it's kind of like doing an exit interview with an employee. It's very telling. It also serves another purpose, two other purposes. Aside from telling, it helps you modify what you're doing next. So they come back and they say, well, I didn't like these three pieces. And you're like, wow, I never even thought about that. They were upset that I came to meetings wearing jeans because I thought I could because the staff was. They didn't like that. That's great to know. Or something more specific, they did this, this, and this, but we still have these three needs. Well, I didn't know they had those three needs. I didn't ask them that specific question. You know, you go back and you say, hey, in follow-up to your exit form, I know you identified these needs. Can we have a chance to talk to you about how we can meet those needs?
Do you have specific templates that you use?
I do, and basically everything I do, I've templatized, if that's such a word. So I have a first client meeting. I sit down with a client, and I meet with them for the first time. I do three pages of interviews with specific questions about marketing. When I exit a client, I do. When I have an engagement letter, I start out the template. When I have, you know, over 9 years, I don't believe in recreating the wheel. When I meet somebody for the first time, the email they get is a standard email. I customize it about them, but I start it, it's already there. And I think that as you craft things to your field and you revise things, you should save them.
Well, actually, what I meant by that is it's something you could share. Or is it some public?
No.
I didn't know if you maybe had something online, a website that had a good one.
Yeah, no. There's Million Dollar Consulting. He shows sample engagement letters. I don't know if they show sample exit ones or not. And some of them are valuable, like as a starting point. But you know, I think like a lot of it though is what suits your needs. You kind of have to develop over time. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a question, it's a comment. I was surprised and thankful to see that you put in the business plan structure, the significant risk factor.
Yeah.
That was very new and refreshing for me, because many times I'm giving a presentation about my business and thinking, well, what are the risks? And how do you know? You know, the skepticism hit. And it helps to frame it. I was always wondering how I could kind of pre-act instead of wait to react.
You know, I agree. I mean, I, by nature, tend to think of challenges that are coming. That's one of the things I'm good at, very good at for clients, which they love, and at times it makes me crazy, too. But, but it's useful, because if you commit it to paper, a couple of things are accomplished. One is, it gets out of your head, so instead of you stirring around with it. Two is, you can then use that as a action plan. So you admit, here's four problems. One of the things I found was that I didn't like the fact that I wasn't interacting in terms of strategic aspects of my business enough with somebody else. And I took an online an assessment which said that for my personality, I need a person who's the idea person. And so that's one of the reasons why I partnered with a coach. And that's one of the pieces they do. Now, for different clients where I coach, I do a different thing. And pointing out shortcomings is one. Some clients need someone to hold them to the fire. I don't need that. I'm overly disciplined. I need somebody for more visionary things. Yeah?
Help build a relationship with the client, I think, to know that they might have something they can offer you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Other questions?
Are you going to be able to share your slides with us?
Yeah, sure. If you give me if anybody emails me, they're interested in that.
What I'll do, Adam, is I'm going to remember. Have this all hooked up, and I'll make that as a part of the request that they can, I can either give you my business card and
okay.
You can send it to me, or I'll put it in here and
okay.
They can request
sure.
To you direct.
Great.
Okay. That way you'll have then a list of everybody.
Exactly.
That will be coming at
okay, a lot of great ideas. Thank you
sure.
Very, very much for sharing.
Thank you.
Are you able to stay around afterwards
and
take more questions?
Yes, I'll be
okay. Could we turn the projector off?
Small white remote. Simplest.
If you need a used coffee break, feel free to. But now is the open forum, so tell us what your question, your challenge, your success, your frustration, and we will make up an answer. So, who is first? Yes, Melody.
No. I asked my question.
So what are you going to do? What are you
going to
do differently?
I'm going to go home and next week start working on business plan.
Okay. Why next week? What's wrong with today? A good rainy day?
I have painting to do in my house.
All right. We're going to follow up.
What day next week?
Monday.
Okay.
She's got it.
Diane has a question.
I'm an idea person. I'm one of those kind of visionary people, so sometimes I'm all over the place. But it just, what Adam said that triggered about having to coach, I just think this group is such a wonderful range of experience, and to me, it's great talking with people that are in other lines of business other than mine, because they actually get boring in their own business a lot. I wonder if a group might be interested in maybe breaking up into groups of four or five and then getting together and presenting our business plans to each other and critiquing, and make sure we have a very diverse group. Like, I wouldn't want to be with somebody that is in the same line of business as me, because I need somebody to tell me where it stinks, you know, and doesn't work or something. But it's just an idea, maybe do that sometime when we come here or have somebody present their marketing plan.
I think it's a great idea. And interestingly, when the group first started and we were smaller, there was only like three or four of us around the table. What we did each meeting is everybody brought in their business plan, but it was a smaller group. And we were kind of like their board.
Mm-hmm.
And we would kind of poke holes in it and ask them why this, why that. I think the group, the good news and bad news is the group is such a size, I don't think that's practical, but I would certainly form a group or find other people who care about you and your business and bounce your plan off of someone else. I don't think, I don't know if this is the forum anymore.
Yeah, well, and that's why I'm throwing out ideas, planting an idea, we'll see what comes
up. But I would, and I have a consultant friend, and he and I get together, you know, once a month. We talk almost every day now, and we bounce ideas around. We swap plans. We give each other referrals. So, yes. Questions, comments, frustrations, suggestions, successes. How is business?
Have a question, and I need a resource. Are there any resources out there on these for office sites? My colleague and I recently bought a property, and we want to have it integrated into an office site. We're looking for, you know, capital for that. We're looking at about $50,000.
We can pass the hat, and we've got 25 people. Everybody kicks in 2,000.
Yeah, why not? I don't have a hat.
You're working with SBA. Is SBA, are they a source?
SBA, we're working through one of your local banks, would guarantee a loan.
Mm-hmm.
Your prize sees a creditor a little weak.
Yeah.
Are you providing jobs as a function?
Possibly,
yeah. Might have some
stimulus packages.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're doing providing jobs, talk to your state rep about what programs the state has.
Aren't there some women-owned business benefits?
Mm-hmm. Small business loans, yeah, definitely for women.
I worked with PNC and
Wachovia,
but I just thought I'd throw it out to see
the people. You don't like passing
a hat idea? Yes, we could.
Was she asking about funding? The question about
making for office renovations, yes.
Oh, for office renovations, not funding for starting a business. Okay. Never mind.
Good. I like questions like that. Next one. Keep them coming.
I do know he's not here today, but we do have an architect who is in our group that might have a connection in terms of networking. His name
is George Schaefer.
Thank you, George Schaefer. Gosh, you're good on that.
I am good. He happens to be a client. Woo-hoo. See, I'm connected.
So back to my question, how is business for the consultants who have started their practice already? How are you finding 09, Jim?
My business is jumping. It's going very well. And I'll tell you what I did. When I first started 8 months ago, I used a shotgun approach on my website. I had probably 12 different services. And I stepped back and I started asking myself, you know, how many consultants are out there with all these services that I'm offering? And there's thousands. Then I started narrowing down, and now I list five, but one is a nonprofit. I do security consulting for churches at no cost, so that's on there. But I have four main areas, and there are two of them. There's only a handful in the country. that do it. So that's, you know, has been working for me, is narrowing it down. What do I do that very few people in the country do? You know, versus out there where I'm looking and saying, okay, there's 10,000 other people who can do it. Some can do it better, some can't. But at the end of the day, when you're out there looking now, people are finding me on the website. So.
And let me actually just say, too, about the networking and part of what your business is going to go is because I shared your name yesterday. I was at a group meeting, and you're very welcome. There were several, it was a, you know, all interested in the nonprofit world, but not for that specifically piece. But there was other things that was on your LinkedIn profile that I thought would be very good for a group yesterday. And I want to just then add that is using this kind of group, bounce off each other, and you know, I'm going to do this email thing out, but this is a group to use that.
Just want to add to that, and this is something that Adam and I talk about frequently in my 25 plus years in sales and self-management. And I have found, if you're familiar with the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule, that 80% of your business comes from 20% of your customers, that it's critically important to understand the market that you're going to serve, so you don't over-invest time trying to be all things to all people. And I believe it also applies to the services that you provide, right? So what you were just talking about is this whole notion, and I think we're in the type of a business environment where the more you specialize, actually, the better off you are, because you then are differentiating yourself from everyone else. So, you know, I used to work for a design firm that does, quote, environmental graphic design, and they really focus on wayfinding in the healthcare space in hospitals. You know, navigating hospitals is not easy. And, you know, it's amazing, you know, he had a very successful $8 million business, and he did this one little thing, okay, and designed and manufactured to one little market segment. So I think the more you can specialize, actually, it seems counterintuitive to what you might think is appropriate, but I think as you already started to learn, it becomes advantageous if you can do that.
I go around and I ask people, in a down economy, what's up? That's a question I'd like to throw out to the group. What's up? You know, because that's the way it works. So how do you turn, you know, how do you see things as glass half full? Where are the opportunities in a down economy?
I think it's a great question, the question we all need to ask ourselves. I asked myself that question back in late 2008. And I said, geez, I keep seeing these unemployment figures. I've been doing outplacement and career coaching kind of pro bono. Why don't I start to charge for outplacement and career coaching? Bingo. Now, I'm still working on getting that word out. But so I kind of changed my model a little bit and taking advantage of or leveraging, you know, the current challenges out there. And we'll start to market, charge for it, hopefully get paid for doing outplacement, you know, counseling and coaching. And then when the economy shifts, people start hiring, then I'm guessing I'll make a little shift again. And I think Adam was kind of talking about this and say, geez, people are going to need help recruiting, selection. Yep. I'm going to shift my focus again a little bit at that point, and just as the outplacement goes down, the selection is going to go up. So that's what I've done. Somebody had a hand up. I think it was Tony.
Yeah. I specialize in manufacturing, automation of plants, operational, you know, efficiencies. When the economy is very strong and companies are making a lot of money, they don't care how inefficient they are, and they're not going to bring you in. But when the economy is down, things are a bit slow, it's more of an opportune time for that organization to bring somebody in, to do an assessment, to do an evaluation, to put improvements in place so they become more profitable now, and as the economy turns back, their profits will even be better as they, you know, boost their business back up. So, you know, in that environment, you know, we can take advantage of the down economy, positioning what you're going to do and how you're going to do it.
As long as the funds are there.
I started to say, do you use value propositioning?
There's value propositioning. We always find a return on investment. Okay, we'll go in and always find, even in a down economy, where there's waste. Right. And, you know, without finding a return on investment for organizations, they're not going to do anything.
Right.
But if they could see the payback versus what they're spending to get that payback, typically you'll get the door opened up.
Alan?
If you've been paying attention to the somewhat recent uptick in the stock market, I mean, what they've been talking about is technology is leading the way a lot for the same reasons, for, you know, the ability to create efficiencies within a business that drive cost structure down and reduce the need for headcount or, you know, the need to add more people sometime into the future. So that's an area. Healthcare hasn't been significantly hit on the delivery side. Okay, so that's a big area that we could explore as well. And there's others, but those are the two that come to mind.
You know, we shouldn't just look at the economy. We should look at things like, you know, recently passed or upcoming legislation.
That's right.
That may generate opportunities. So don't just look at the economy. Look at other stuff. There may be new technology rolling out that you say, there's a way I can leverage that. Yeah.
One of the strategies I'm using now, I call it seesaw. You're down, but I'm up, and I'm going to work, you know, not to overpower you. But you can't match your clients' experience. Human services lend a lot of webbing opportunities. You know, I say I do the arts, but then someone will see me, and then there's the child care, the employment need. I mean, you can find a niche that you can match where that is and help a person with your talent. And that's another thing I find I've been chunking a bit off and giving, and it flops back to me in a kind of wonderful way.
Did you say flop?
Not flop.
Flop?
It kind of zap.
Is that
a
consulting
back.
Term?
No, it's a Teresa term. It's a password. But seriously, I like the gift principle very much. That has benefited me a whole lot.
You know, it's very easy to throw our arms up and say the recession.
No, but then that's why we did.
And roll over. And I made a decision in 08 saying, I'm going to make 09 my best year, not my worst. Yeah. The business is out there. We got to work a little bit harder to get to it. We got a little bit be a little more creative. But I made a conscious decision that 09 is going to be my best. Okay. So talk to me on 12/31 and we'll see if I did it or not. But that's just the mindset that I went into this year.
And the society, and I think this is where we differ. I mean, come on, we've never been down. We thank you, but we've always come back. So seesaw it and make it happen for yourself. I mean, don't believe the hype that kids say on the street, but you can't be, you have to be part of the contributor.
Actually, can I actually ask a question? Because we do have nonprofit people in the room, and I'm kind of looking at you, and I know you're transitioning out, but you've been in it. I've always been a proponent that says, you know, I got a lot of work because I did work with nonprofits. Well, they have boards, and then those boards have businesses, and, you know, and then they might be on boards of other nonprofits and so forth. And that's how a lot of work has come my way. Right now, clients are struggling, some of my nonprofits, so I'm focusing on other elements. But would it be right to say that maybe now to add your services at a discounted rate or something to the nonprofit world to help them not shut down, we'll come back to you in the future, and you might end up finding that you've met the right team of players within that place, and then when that nonprofit gets out of the hurdle or out of, you know, over that hump or whatever, hasn't closed their doors, you end up looking like a hero. I mean, is that reasonable?
Yeah. That's very reasonable.
Well, I would say that for nonprofits, a big opportunity is mergers and acquisitions.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And collaborations and partnerships.
So look into them, and we can get you some names. You know,
I was just curious, Adam. What would be your response to that question? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I mean, my closest thing for nonprofits is we did the board for Delco Chamber, forming the new president, doing the search for that, and helping them with their strategic planning. Mm-hmm. And they're considering a merger. Actually, it's funny you should mention that they're considering a merger, and they have certain challenges that they face. You know, if you have nonprofit experience, the notion that you can't make money in nonprofit consulting is definitely not true. I have two friends that are making, the person I know who's making the most money in consulting, his clients are all nonprofits.
So
it's a very small world too. Yeah.
Right.
So it's not hard to be very well known.
I was just going to share to the question about where to be focused on. I was reminded this by a good friend of mine when we talked about unemployment. He goes, remember, 92% of the people are still working in this country. And if you think about normal unemployment in this country, it's about 4.5%. We've only added 3.5% to that. And while I'm not trying to diminish that that's a significant change, it's easy to focus on the negative things, especially when you know that's what sells in the media, right? I mean, they don't go and broadcast good news, you know. In the good news business, they're in the bad news business. They don't say that, but that's when you watch the news, that's what you're seeing. So I often find that the less news I watch or pay attention to, the better off I am emotionally.
Yes.
Good point.
Lisa.
I have just one comment and a question or one thought. The gift principle also works. I was actually volunteering at a nonprofit and was offered a contract now, plus other people that work with that nonprofit want to contract with me. Secondly, I think another big untapped market that I'm finding, having been in corporate America for a long time, is where companies are not downsizing, they're taking their individual contributors and moving them to different jobs. And so a lot of us have maybe previously talked about working on, you know, executive level coaching or development. I think there's a lot of opportunity for getting in and working with individual contractor or individual contributors, especially around what I believe Cindy's going to talk next month about personality profiling, because you're taking people out of their niche. We had a lot of data entry people, and to avoid downsizing them, we were pushing them into customer service. And traditionally, a lot of them, that's their not their personality style. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to go in and make an impact on their return on investment with their individual contributors versus just focusing on supervisory level and above.
I have personally found a great source of business for me is through competitors. And again, that may sound counterintuitive, but I've created these alliances. In some case, there were long-standing relationships. We do the same work. Partner left, got a big project, you know. So don't rule that out as a source of business for you. Talk to your competitors, create alliances, relationships. A majority of my business comes as a subcontractor from competitors. And sometimes the rate
is multi-tiered in nature.
I'm sorry.
I said subcontracting is multi-tiered in nature.
Yeah. And sometimes the rate I'm getting, depending upon how experienced they are and what their market is, sometimes I'm getting my full rate even on a net basis.
Yeah, actually, I've done one sub job only, and it's paying me $25 more per hour than the highest I've ever gotten from anybody. So I agree.
How about the government?
I was going to suggest the government.
Are there any differences or tips or tricks or, you know, is it worth it? All those questions about government as a source of clients.
Well, we used to have a lot of contracts with the government when I was in a prior consulting role. And they do have set-asides for small business groups, but you really have to have the ability to invest in proposal writing. Because they do most of that by RFP. But the best way to get into the government is also referral, so they let you know something's coming up, and you can pre-qualify some of those clients, because we've spent as much as 120 hours, you know, literally weeks, putting together government proposals. And that won't change, but the good news is they're gearing up to deliver some things they don't have capability to, so people are saying they're not only government jobs, they're government.
It was subcontracting that made me think of it. Yeah. So you don't have to put all the time and effort into going in and trying to put yourself up with the RFP, but you're working through other people.
You can go either way.
One of the things I talk about these relationships that I've created. I'm not going to stand up here and say that everyone has worked out. You know, some a lot better than others, some are zero. Mm-hmm. But, and I think Adam mentioned this as well, what I do is, and I love Constant Contact as well, and that's I right. do a monthly newsletter, but I do a quarterly newsletter to a group that I call my partners. So these are people that I've created, formed alliances with, and just to remind them that I'm out there, because they can't keep in mind what I do and what you do. And so it's a very brief newsletter. It doesn't vary that much from quarter to quarter. I will tell them, here's some recent projects that I've completed. Here's some stuff I recently bid on. Here's my, you know, my list of services. Keep me in mind. So it's an easy newsletter to do. It doesn't change that much each quarter, and it goes out to this partner group, which is maybe 20-ish, and it just gets me in front of them again. And if I get one phone call, it's worth my time. And a lot of times I do. Another good question. Give us a tough one. Challenge us. Marketing, pricing.
Will Villanova win this weekend?
Yes!
I'm not a football fan, so you're asking the wrong guy.
Especially since it's basketball. Yeah, really. You really proved it. It's basketball.
I'll tell you about an experiment that we're doing right now. I don't know whether it's going to work or not, and I'll come back in a couple months if Jim will let me and tell you if it did. But another consultant and I found a woman who does, it doesn't matter that she's a woman, but she is, but she does telemarketing, and we've given her a list, a target list of companies with the contact name, and she's making phone calls. We agreed on a rate per hour. And then we're paying her an incentive for each appointment she gets for us. Then she gets, we're paying her a $50 incentive for each appointment, and then a flat rate per hour. So we've gotten, between the two of us, we've gotten maybe 5, 8, 10 appointments. But it's still out. You know, we're not sure whether they're good appointments yet to see if anything happens. I want to get the cost per appointment down. It's still a little bit high. So the more, and she's averaging about 20, 25, you know, numbers per hour that she's able to call. Now, she doesn't connect. You know, it's voicemails, and so she may connect with a real person maybe 3 or 4 times an hour. And then if she can get one or two of those to convert to an appointment, then... So we're trying it. We're investing some money to see. If it's a tough... you know, a lot of companies are saying, not now, we're too busy, I think they're distracted. You know, the market goes down, they say no. The market goes up, they say maybe. So we're going to try it. We're not going to invest, you know, $100,000. We're going to invest a couple $1,000s, and we're going to buy, you know, 10 hours a week and see if it works. So think about trying something different. But call, yes. And then?
Well, this is a question. A subject change about proposals. What about proposals? You've talked about getting a signed engagement letter. Do you have any advice around submitting proposals to make sure that you're not spending unnecessary time submitting proposals that perhaps the customer's really not ready yet?
Alan, you want to answer that? You're probably better at answering that than me.
My goal is to have the client ask me to write for a proposal. Okay, instead of offering to do it,
right.
You know, my objective is, you know, when they say, well, you know, I have a problem, and I say, well, would you like me to, you know, get a, draw up a proposal for you? Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, that's when you write them. I was thinking about it as you were just sharing what you said. I spent, as I mentioned, my whole career in sales, and only recently, in the last 5 years, I went to a training program that, in my mind, was the most profound training program I could do. And the irony of it is, the guy's local, and it's called High Probability Selling. And the irony is I've become friends with him, and it actually was based, which is interesting, on early in his life, he played Texas Hold'em poker, which of course now is popular. Back then it wasn't. The guy's 73 years old. So, that, if you know anything about that game, which I don't, it's really based a lot on probability theory, okay? And sales is the same thing, and he applies that model. And, you know, you just offered some comments, well, they're not willing to do it, or they are interested. And in his world, in his training program, he uses the concept that the word interested is garbage, okay? He asks, he creates what he calls a high probability offer. It's a 35 to 45 word offer that your telemarketer would call and make an offer to someone. And they literally, in the offer, they say, do you want X? And the answer you're looking for is yes or no, not maybe. Maybe's a garbage word, okay? Either you want something or you don't, okay? And the analogy that I use is, none of us walk into a car dealership if you don't want a car, okay? you know, if you walk into a car dealership and you want a car, you may or may not want the car from the dealer that you just entered, because you may be looking for five different models and you're not sure yet, but you've made a decision that you need a new form of transportation. Okay? And you can't sell to somebody who has a need but no want. You can definitely sell to somebody who has a want and no need.
That's right. Oh, that's so
good. Okay. And he really talks about our goal, and this is what, you know, he learned early in his sales career, is our goal is not to sell meetings. We don't make money from meeting with people. We make money from solving a problem that somebody has. Okay? And I shouldn't meet with you, or you shouldn't meet with me out of some level of obligation or whatever. It's really because we determined that there's a need that you have that I might be able to solve. And if that's true, then we should meet. Okay, and the purpose of that meeting is to determine, can, for me to better understand your need, and A, can I actually solve that problem? And if we both agree to that, then we determine what's the next step from there. And that may be a proposal at that point, it may not. There may be more due diligence, whatever. So it's highprobsell.com. I don't get any benefit from you, you know, exploring that. They have a telecourse you can take. He has a small book if you want to. Actually, his book, if you go online, I think you can read the first four chapters at no cost. He has an inexpensive book. You can do that. And ultimately, you can do an online course if you choose to do that as well. But
Worth, you know, right? Worth?
Yeah, Jack Worth.
Yeah.
Is his name.
He's a member of ASTD.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have found that to be very profound. And what I've also noticed about consultants, and Adam's a good example, that people come into consultants because they have a high competency in a certain area, and that area is not sales. Okay. And that's why Adam frequently referred and said, well, Alan did this or Alan did this. Because Adam would call me frequently. I have a situation, and he'd bounce ideas off me. What should I do? And that's when I'd say, well, when the guy said I'm ready, you just shut up and say, okay, let's get to business. Okay. I understood that because I've been doing it for 25 years. He hasn't been doing what I've been doing for 25 years. So he was focused on, you know, wanting to give his presentation, because I also know Adam well, and that's not how Adam would buy. And what I tell people is the biggest challenge we have in sales is that we insert our own objections into the sales process. So if we as a buyer would object to something, we actually insert that into a sales process. We emote it, is how we do it. We don't literally do it by saying, well, I would object here. We emote it by our behavior. So, you know, I throw that out because that program really helps you flush all that away and get right to the root of what we're trying to accomplish.
Thank you. I want to add a quick thought on, I was just thinking about the question on proposals. I'm just doing some quick math. It seems like the probability of me getting the assignment when I do a formal proposal historically has been extremely low. When somebody says, just, you know, tell me, give me a quick price, and it's an email, and here's my deliverables, it's hot. So for me, and which your business may be different, it seems like when I'm asked for a proposal, I'm bidding against, you know, they're going out and getting other proposals, or in some case, they've already made the decision, but the boss said, go out and get another price just to make sure this is the right decision, and it's a done deal already.
Yeah, I agree. My clients never ask for proposals.
Oh.
Never. They asked for an engagement letter.
Well, and that's what I was focused on, is the engagement letter.
Yeah. What is an engagement letter?
It's like a letter you'd have from a lawyer or an accountant that just spells out payment terms, cost, what you'll do in the project, you know, the non-compete portion, things like that. Yeah.
I would suggest even if you do a proposal, you still come back with the engagement letter and get them to sign it before you do a lick of work.
Yeah.
You know, I've learned, too, that based upon the size and the formality and the bureaucracy of the organization, that's going to dictate whether they want, you know, some just want more paper to read, and smaller companies just give me an email, yeah.
They also learn from proposals. Oh, yeah. The people that go out and proposals.
If you put too much in there, they'll
learning what's going on, and then they decide from there how they want to proceed.
Or they use it to bid against you.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, you made me think of the question that we would often ask, and that is, someone says, well, you know, would you, even if they ask, well, if I could create a proposal, great, I'll be happy to do that. What are you going to do with the proposal? I mean, you know, let's back to the 80-20 rule. You get to pick your customers. Your customers don't have, you know, we come from this place that, you know, just because someone's interested in me, I should respond to them. Well, you can take that attitude, but you don't have to. You know, you can control who you do business with, and if you don't like the way they're planning on doing business with you, you can say, well, that's not the way I work. Here's how I work. Would you like to work this way? And if they say no, they say, okay, well, we're not a good fit for each other.
And isn't that really the fun of being your own boss and being your business for yourself? You can't choose your boss in corporate. I couldn't.
Dude, I'd like to see a show of hands how many people have actually done that without, like what Alan said, that says, or dropped a client because you realized after you've been, okay, I have. And you know what? There's always, I don't mean to say this in a rude way, but I look at clients like a bus. There's always another one going to come along, you know? So if you miss this one, you'll catch the next one. And I've dropped clients that aren't good fits because I'm spending too much energy on them.
We call
them
firing clients.
Yes, you know, how many? Not too many people.
It's called knowing when to punt. Right. I mean, in a prior business that Bill and I were associated with where we sold solutions, hardware and software and so forth. We have tire kickers, and we can put a lot of effort into this, or do we know when to punt? Also on the price, whether it's a proposal, a letter of engagement, or whatever, ask, are they going based on price? Because if they're going to say to you, I'm going with the lowest price guy, I usually say, I'm not going to be the lowest price guy. Why then go through the effort of doing something? Okay, so that's always a good thing to put in there.
It's very empowering when you get to the point in your business where you know when it's time to walk away and you're able to walk away. And it's tough to do when you're in startup.
That's where my plan comes from, because I never go hungry, because I find clients since when you're hungry, and it's a game plan. One of the things I came from a government background program, so the proposal was it, that's how you got what you needed, and the proposal was it.
If you're hungry, they can sense it. They know you're hungry, and then you start making bad decisions that you'll regret.
Patricia.
I just have an observation, and it's partly from what you said, Steve, which is...
Steve.
And what Adam was saying about your... about, you know, you're establishing your corporate business based on a certain skill set. You set your long-term strategy, you've identified your target market, but you have another skill set, and all of a sudden you see an emerging need for that skill set. How do you really need that flexibility in your business plan to be able to adapt to that? But at the same time, you know, you've set your long-term strategy on a different skill set, potentially a different set of outcomes and products down the road. So in some respects, changing your strategy can affect your long-term strategy. Changing the focus on what skill set to use.
I'm going to add something to your comment, Patty, if I may. And I came to this realization recently, but even though I have certain skill sets, I am now finding myself making a conscious decision that I don't want to do that work anymore. And what I'm doing is doing more of the work that I'm passionate about, that I just love. And if I get paid for it, fine. If not, it's just so rewarding. And I'm doing less of, I'm doing less stand-up training, for example. And as some of you know, I've been in the training business for 30 years and logged thousands of hours in the classroom, but it's not what I want to do. I'd sooner work one-on-one coaching somebody, and they say, nobody ever told me that before. That's more rewarding for me than doing a good eight-hour training session. And I've nothing against trainers. And I still do training, but it's not my passion. So I'm at the point now where I'm following my passion and doing the work that I love to do, and in most cases, I'm getting paid for it. So I think passion maybe needs to be in there. And maybe, I don't know whether it's there when you're in startup because you got to pay the bills, but maybe that's a way to recognize that you've gotten to this next level in your business.
Well, Well, no, I just wanted to, on the end of what you're saying, I agree with you 100%, Steve. I think the other thing is, though, if you recognize a need or a niche, and you know someone who does that, just pull them in. You can either give them the work or decide, do you want to add it to your portfolio or not? But, I mean, but don't do it yourself or try to feel like you got to get the need, because the skill, by the time you get the skill, it's gone and there's 10 other people who
That's a super
you
point.
Stay up to date in your area of passion.
We'll hear one more comment from Patty, and then I'm going to wrap her up. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, in your case, you're willing to forego your old business strategy.
Yeah.
I'm talking about a situation where you still have the same long-term goals, but now you've...
Where I'm going to get there is going to be
an
different.
An interim need that there's some potential with, and how do you address that need? How do you incorporate that into your business?
You know, and some of those decisions, I think, are based on life cycle. You know, the decisions you make at 35 are different than the ones you make at my age. And I want to do the stuff that I love. I want to have fun.
Yep.
You know, I serve my time inside. You know, they let me out. I want to have fun. And, you know, I think if you do that, you'll get paid. One last comment, and then we're going to wrap her up for April. Again, Adam mentioned this in one of his slides, but for those of you, whether you're in the startup phase or whether you're a little bit farther along, assemble your team. And I guess there's two ways I look at team. You know, one is your support people. So have your IT person, have your copy person if you need, you know, emergency, your attorney, your CPA. Assemble your support team. But then also start to build this network, so when you get that request and it's not your passion anymore, you can refer it to one of your associates, and I'm sure they will reciprocate. And so there's kind of two networks or two teams that you probably should think about building. So with that, this is the April meeting, and we will see you on May 1, and Cindy is the speaker, and yes, Sandy.
Could you share your phone number?
Absolutely.
So that we can call you.